pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is the founder of A Little Dream, a Bangalore-based nonprofit working with underprivileged children and celebrating their 10th anniversary this year. The organization started off as an initiative of a former IT professional, Reena Chaudhary, the founder and managing trustee. Over the past decade, A Little Dream has reached out to orphanages and children's homes and touched the lives of 8,500 children. What keeps it pulsating is its dynamic volunteers. Young IT techies of the city have been an integral part of A Little Dream's diverse activities. It was during her corporate years that Reena felt a lacuna in her life, a need to do something for others, to make a difference in the lives of the less fortunate children. She used her artistic skills and reached out to children in orphanages, children's homes, and slums in Bangalore. Thus was born A Little Dream. A Little Dream has over the years been working with children on several projects, be it children in cancer hospital wards, those suffering from thalassemia, diabetes, and HIV positive children, and also holding regular dental camps for children in orphanages and slums. Listen in as Reena shares her journey, her fearlessness, the ability to walk alone on the road not taken, with both commitment and empathy, and her genuine desire to help people in distress. Hi Reena, such a pleasure reconnecting. Welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty. But before we get to the Reena Chaudhary that the world knows you as, I want to know what little Reena was like. And what exactly was her little dream as a little girl? So can you take us through your childhood?
So first, thank you. A big thank you, Rashmi, for having me once again. It's a pleasure talking with you. The little Reena and the now Reena, there's not much of a difference. She's still the same brat, still the naughty one. But of course, she is, I think, a little more tempered along with, years of experience. A little more mature, knows how to handle situations and people better. But the innate qualities that Reena had in those days are the same. The passion to do something different. Basically, always wanting to be different from the others, not to be in the pack, in the herd. You know, so those qualities still remain and has helped me throughout. So nothing of that has changed. But the Reena today is knows where she wants to go, has a few aspirations. Those times were dreamy. It looked a little clouded, those little Reena dreams. But the now the dreams look clearer, more possible to attain. But she doesn't stop dreaming. She still keeps dreaming.
I think dreams keeps all of us alive. So where did you grow up, Reena? Are you a Bangalore person?
My childhood was in Kolkata. You know, the funny part, and as you asked this question, and I was thinking, you know, there are three distinct demarcations in my life, you know, and they're all in different cities. And that's the best part of it. So my childhood was in Kolkata. The little anecdotes, the little, the memories of childhood are purely driven by fun, frolic, happiness. I had a childhood where mom and dad were very unconventional parents, you know, and they allowed me to do what I wanted. It was never anything that they wanted me to do was always through a conversation. So mom was a science teacher. Dad was an engineer in machine tools. We were three sisters, no brothers. And the whole atmosphere was that of explore, let's discuss, let's find out ways of doing things, conversations on the table. So that really helped. You know, we used to have little things like project work at home. And the project's work was such that mom used to plonk herself on the drawing room. You know, everyone did a little bit, someone cutting. So the project's works that I've taken forward in a little dream is basically has born its seed in the drawing room of my house. Mom encouraged us through project work. She was a science teacher. So I remember a solar eclipse happened. We all went at a cousin's place to watch solar eclipse on Doordarshan. Now, conventional mom will say, halo pele, you know, eat your food, don't have a bath, don't do this. My mom was busy making into a science project. You know, you can't look at the sun at that point of time. So she took the mirror and she was reflecting the whole activity of the sun onto a wall. And we were able to see the moon, engulf and come, and the total eclipse happened, the complete darkness. So these things like this cannot come from a book, you know, to be seen. You never forget solar eclipse. She wanted to teach us respiration in school, okay? Unlike any other teacher, she got goat lungs, okay, from somewhere. And I still remember she was on this, maths or something was happening, and she just walked in, spoke to the maths teacher and said, I want to show them respiration. So the expansion and the contraction of the lungs was shown by mom through goat lungs. Now, those are images that you carry through, and you realize that no books can give you what this kind of practical knowledge can give. So this was my mom. Till today, she plays a very critical role in my A Little Dream. All my happiness tools, which I'll talk about later, is it's born root from mom herself, you know, like how are little elements you can weave into a fun camp or a camp for an underprivileged kid comes through a conversation with mom. And that's what it was about. Creativity in my house was there. I mean, 4-year-old kid drawing the sky in colors which were unbelievable, right? Purple or some green or something. And I remember she asked me this question. So she, you know, I used to draw anywhere. And it was never the drawing book. It was anywhere I used to scribble. She used to give me that scribble pad. And she used to ask me, what is this? This is my sky. Now, for a conventional parent, the sky needs to be blue, right? For my mom, it was an self-expression of how I view the sky. It was never trying to compartmentalize us into, you know, kind of, you must look at things this way. And this is the wide horizon that she gave is what has really we have imbibed. You know, that what is the amazing part of my childhood or my growing up. Like things like empathy was in doing. So anyone who would come home, be it a maid or any delivery person or anybody, the Istriwala coming in, he was given, he was made to sit, had a cup of tea. Now this, something that got in a biscuit packet was left, water was left, you know, in that matki. So these were things which we actually experienced. So empathy doesn't come like daan karo. Empathy comes from within. And that is what you see your mom doing. And that's what you inculcate. So those were the beautiful memories that I have of my parents who always helped us to grow, to explore. So if you ask me what were my keywords or the operative words in my childhood days, and the operative word would be creativity, growth, explore, discover, And that's how my individuality actually happened. As an individual, the independent three of us, very independent, is because mom and dad allowed us to do it. It never into the rat race. Okay, that was another thing. You know, academic rat race was never in our house. You go enjoy, do your best. Even the worst of subjects, the best of subjects, go and have fun. I've never seen mom come, and she was a school teacher, mind you. I've never seen mom have a discussion with dad on, you know, she's doing so badly in this grade. You know, the neighbor next door did got this. And there was never a competition in my house. Life was about living it, seeing it, believing it, experiencing. That's what the way I've lived my life. And I think that was when you have your parents as your cheerleaders, you do not want anything more. And that's how my childhood has been.
Oh my God. Having a passionate teacher for a mom who makes learning fun and makes learning easy in such a way that it's so practical, you still haven't forgotten solar eclipse. And making sure that the truer side of a child is always out rather than boxing. Very beautiful childhood, Reena. But when a child is given that much freedom, the child would move to the other side of creativity and become over-creative are also chances. So how were you in school as a student, a topper in the top 10, and just moved on to excel in everything that you did as far as studies went? And what about extracurricular activities?
So let me put it this way. Schooling, I was an okay student. I wasn't a topper. But the point was, whatever I learned it with passion and will. So I had my favorite subjects, like, you know, cultural history, monuments, and that those passions I've carried forward. Travel, geography. I remember we had scrapbooks on geography. So we were doing cities like London, Paris, Rome, and those are the scrapbooks I've kept, and those are the memories I've kept. And I know the world map, and in its, you don't have to tell me, I know it all, you know. So those were subjects that I carried through. Of course, creativity, if you say extracurricular activities, singing, dancing, I did Kathak for some time, singing, dancing. I was not so much into sports, dribble with the basketball for some time, but not my game. But other things we were encouraged to, you know. So schooling was fun, and I think all I remember of schooling was basically enjoying myself in whatever I wanted to. So it was never, as I said, the academics was never, you know, it has to be. If today I wanted to be a rock star, be it, I would be the best rock star or an artist or something. So those were the things that were, you know, coming. I think at one stage I wanted to be an artist at one stage. So, you know, taking that forward just after having done my 11, 12 in between, trying to get into graduation and things like that. I remember I had done a course with Lindas, okay, and they were asking us to go and meet certain customers, okay, and we had a set of questions to give, understand the product, and go and talk to customers. That was the genesis of understanding what advertising was about, and I got so excited in it, and I said I want to do advertising. It just and you know, advertising is not a field parents are aware of. Parents are more aware of, they knew I wouldn't be into medical or I won't be doing engineering, none of this. Anything which was the path with others had done is not my cup of tea. I wanted to do those weirdo things. So, you know, I went and I said, I want to do advertising. Mom and dad had no idea. So that's it, fair enough. So I did a course in Billums in advertising and communication. So I was interested in it, got me interested, and then I joined an advertising firm, Tara Sinha McCann Erickson. That time it was Tara Sinha McCann Erickson, and was handling a brand called Keo Karpin in West Bengal. And then I realized that, you know, Calcutta wasn't the place where I could understand brands or service industry or anything. I needed to go to the Mecca of advertising, and there where I shifted base to Bombay. And I said, I told mom and dad that I'm going to Bombay. Dad gave me, I still remember, he gave me 2 weeks. And he said, if you can get yourself a job, you go there. And I said, you don't have to worry. There's a friend of mine. And I just left for Bombay. Mom was worried. Dad was like, I have my friends. Don't worry. But I said, I'm not going to stay with your friends. So I packed my bag and I went to a friend's place, gave two interviews, and one of them worked. So I joined an advertising firm, and there where I handled beautiful brands. My brand, one of them was Vadilal, and the other one was Lakme. Lakme was a brand where I learned the launch of LAT. And you know, you have to be with the brand to understand a brand can be personified. Market surveys, you sit with the whole genesis of the brand, the nomenclature, the name, the packaging, the customer, the target audience, all that I learned. So as I was saying, that first phase, which was childhood, actually moved on to the second phase, which was my work phase. And in those work phase, what I learned through advertising and later through IT, my operative words were learning about products, services, teams, how to work in teams, how does hierarchy work, how does creative messaging work. And each one of them has helped me in my later stage. That's the beauty of it. You know, that nothing goes with whatever you pick up in life and its stages, it beautifully culminates into giving you that at a later stage of life. And so, as I said, I remember going into tier two markets to understand what a lipstick means for a person in a tier two city is an amazing experience, because she doesn't have the liberty of putting lipstick the way a tier one city girl would. And what are the connotations? What are the aspirations? How she perviews a single thing like a lipstick. That kind of experience was amazing.
And what was it, Reena? I'm very curious. What was lipstick to a tier two girl?
It was the one keyword she said is liberating.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a lipstick stick, right? And coming out with a word like liberation, that, you know, she doesn't have to. So for her, what is was self-expression. She wants to look beautiful, and the need of, and the problem was many of them had to take permission to put cosmetics on their face. You know, I've come from, and this is not something I'm used to. So understanding those, going into the cities, going into the tier two, tier through three cities, where you understand that what are these little nuances of life, what life is. So my whole understanding of life and that whole exposure, I of course, that was domestic market. Then I moved on to IT. And I when the dot, first I moved on to .com. So the .com boom happened, and I was there, and I was handling so people were translating from the brick and mortar to the online version. And there was I trying to take their whole, you know, their products, their the whole services onto the online platform. Something that, which was new to me, but was very challenging. Trying to understand, and everything was that time was portals and websites. Trying to understand a user, how he comes onto the website and makes a decision to buy or not to buy a brand. You know, the whole translation from a one-to-one brick and mortar and translating it to the online was an amazing learning phase for me. So there were a lot of dot-coms mushrooming, and I was enjoying that, you know. So I was working in different sectors. So I worked in a portal, which was the Sanjeev Kapoor portals we worked on the first time he came online. So that was a beautiful phase, which I did in Bombay. And of course, then came the IT boom. So from .com, it came to the IT boom. And then when I realized, again, there comes a sense of realizing that you'll have to be in the midst of it. And I said, I had to shift base. So, and I realized it was Bangalore. So Bangalore that time was this nice, sleepy city enjoying its weather, the senior citizens enjoying it. And there was this bunch of ours which just landed up. It's like, you know, from Mars and trying to see the whole hustle bustle of the city. What I've seen in Bombay was like, for me, that life on the train was make use of every minute, cutting off vegetables, and then, you know, the Guju auntie taking out his khakra dhokra and selling it. I've seen time is money, money is time, and that kind of scenario. And then I move on to Bangalore, and Bangalore was a different thing altogether. And I was like, here people don't understand time. Why don't they, you know, understand the essence of what it means, time? I still remember on MG Road, I walked into one of the, they had these, just started with these food worlds. And I walked into it and I asked him for a pastry. And that guy was sitting and making a box, you know, front of me, making the box, putting the pastry. And I looked at my time. I said, gone, 1 minute gone, bhaiya. And I'm giving him a sermons on how you can save. And, you know, when look at lunchtime, when there's, you know, a lot of time in hand, why don't you make your boxes then? So I had picked up those lessons and then came to the IT and worked in a IT, a major IT marketing firm. And the best part of it was, it was humongous, right? The processes had to be put in place. Please. So here I learned my operative words here were, and I always, you know, draw this parallel to life that what would be my operative words in those things? The key operative words were systems, processes. And that really helped me, you know. The NGO sector per se is not so organized. And here you try to put systems, processes, hierarchies in place. You've learned all that, right? You how to work with teams, team management, motivation of teams. All that that I learned helped me in the later stages. And that is what I picked up from the online and the dot-com and the IT era.
Wow. So here is this Kolkata girl who's found a new life in Mumbai. That time it was Bombay. And then you move into Bengaluru today, but Bangalore then, which was a pensioner's paradise. So three cities, three cultures, three dynamics. And when you were settling down in Bangalore, how was a little dream born?
You know, there'll be a twinkle in my eyes. So the dream was actually there right from the childhood days. You know, looking at an underprivileged child, was there was an innate desire to do something, but it couldn't have been channelized. It was like, you know, more giving biscuits, doing this a little bit, going and, you know, giving something during Christmas, but it never got channelized. And during my work, so that was the childhood days, and I'm just taking that transition. And then in my work life, it was very, very busy. So couldn't do much. But, you know, on Saturday, Sundays, sit down with a child under the Dadar bridge to teach him or hand over them, you know, some snacks. That was it. When I came to Bangalore and in the humdrum, the hustle bustle of life, where you're doing a 9 to 5, 5 becomes 6, 7, 8, 9. You're working, you're earning, all that is good. After some time, there was a lacuna. There was a kind of, what am I doing? Is this for me? I've done it, I've seen it, I've been it, but there's something missing. And I kept, and this doesn't happen, it's like, you know, aha, one day you come up with it. It happens gradually, you keep on questioning yourself. When you're a little free Saturday, Sunday, then what I started doing is started going to orphanages. Just visiting them, sitting with the kids, trying to understand. And observation had become a part of me, you know, through all that I had think. So was to just, you know, I was in that process of just taking in, trying to understand the whole thing. Because nothing you can do unless you've seen it all, understand how it works, what is it. It's easier said that, you know, nothing is happening here or there. But when you're poking those holes in it, first, let's understand the process. So I did that. Then I joined Landmark. And there I met Sunil Jain. So one of my projects he gave me was, he said, you'll have to do this SELP project. So naturally, I wanted to do something from the underprivileged kids. So I put a nice project report and I said, I'm touching about 35 kids and that's it, you know, kind of a thing. So he came up and told me, sorry, your project has to be in a very nice way, the way I think you know Sunil, in a way he says, 100 children you will have to touch. So under my breath, I said, yeah, very well said. I still remember telling one friend of mine, Smirky, 100 children he wants me to touch. Where will I get? And those kind of questions, deliberating. Imagine in 10 years, we've touched 8,500 kids. So, you know, that's what, through the various programs that I've done, through my 42 orphanages that I've touched, through the slums that we've touched. So that's a big number. You know, when you do massive drives, projects and things like that, and you're keeping on doing, it's you're not in the number game. You're just going and touching, and the touch
project. One sec. So here, now I'm curious, 8,000 plus kids, which means when you started off, it must have been a weekend affair because you were working. When did it slowly start moving into a team? Because Reena is alone. When did the rest join your team? How did it grow so huge?
Team started in the very beginning. And I said, this A Little Dream is all about teamwork, right? So when we started, it was few of the members who would, you know, come and join me in the weekends. And still, it's a weekend program. We do some programs in the weekdays, but very little, Olive. Still, my major chunk of my volunteers are IT people. But look at the beauty of it. So I used to go to these engineers. Now, how do I get volunteers? That's easier said than done. So I used to go to these IT colleges. And during their festive season, you know, they used to have these fests. I used to go and tell them, give me 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes in between your fest where other colleges are coming. And let me have a word with the with these students. And there where I used to say that, hey, what are you doing in the weekend? It was like, I know you'll be going to a mall. You'll be going and watching a movie, going to a restaurant. Why don't you give me a chance? Come and work with me for one of my projects. Just enroll yourself. Come and help me out. And this is the genesis of how I started asking them for volunteering. You won't believe this, Rashmi, but those volunteers who enrolled 10 years back are still with me. So from student, they took their first job, second job, third job, got married, have kids. Now their husbands and kids are part of my. Of course, there are lots of new volunteers coming in, but these are the people who've stayed with me. Volunteering, and one thing I'm very clear about, it cannot coming from, I feel like doing, let me go on a Saturday, Sunday. These volunteers at times have changed 3 buses and come. It's not easy slogging yourself out from Monday to Friday. And then on Saturday morning at 8 a.m., we are going to go to Magadi. It's not an easy game. It has to come from within. And so there'll be those who will, you know, join you and then drop out. Sure enough. But those who will carry on with you are the ones who really believe in your cause, who really believe, you know, and the best part about volunteering is they're not here for any kind of appreciation. Oh, you've done great work. Nobody knows who did what. The job profiles were given, the job was at hand, and everyone jumped into it. If someone was not there, couldn't make it, or couldn't do a particular job, the other part, and sometimes I don't even know how it happened. So this was the beauty of volunteering. I mean, it comes from deep within. And I always go to, and of course, let me put another thing. Volunteering is not just about the IT techies. It has involved a whole lot of people.
Reena, I want to know that what was the genesis of A Little Dream? What offshooted that idea to you that you took it to this level of going? What were you doing with the Little Dream? How did it get conceived in your head? You said while you were small in Calcutta, also you were doing it. You were doing it in Mumbai over the weekends. But what shifted in Bangalore that you decided to take it full length, full scale? Where did it start and how did it grow? You told us about the volunteers who joined in. But what was your purpose behind starting A Little Dream? Yes, the landmark course. And then you put out this project and you said 35 kids. But what were you planning to do with those 35 kids?
Okay, so good question. I think I missed that point out. Now let me come back to it. So the first thing was when I started A Little Dream, it started with the art camps. Okay, I am an artist. I work on acrylics, oils. So art is an expression. Okay. And as I said, I was, you know, I was with these orphanages and these, I was going and observing. So I realized food, shelter, clothing, education, the basics were taken care of. But there was a layer there, a softer layer, where no one was talking to them. Okay. You, when we come from privileged backgrounds, in our privileged backgrounds, we, someone comes and says, hey, what do you want to do in life? What will you become? How do you see yourself 2-3 years? There's nobody there. Okay. Either they are children from single parents or parents who are not there and left there. And so there was, if in a place there are 40, 45 kids, you can't, they are taking care of their food, shelter, clothing. You can't expect that dialogue to happen. And people were coming, giving them food, going away. So all the, but no one was sitting and giving time to them. There, I devised a program which was called the art camp. And in these art camps, what we did, we gave them these art kits, gave them paper, and then we went through the whole process of what is a dream. So I asked them, when do you dream? They said, at night. I said, what rubbish? I dream in the morning. She says, what did you dream of? I said, I dream of swimming. I dream of, you know, expressing myself like a fairy, like a bird. So, you know, I was giving them cue words and trying to explain that you can dream the impossible, because dreaming to them, and you won't believe me, Rashmi, when I was handing over those papers, it was someone drawing a stick like a teacher. They hadn't thought of anything which was unconventional. Dreams are supposed to be put in boxes. Okay. They had to be, and those who couldn't draw, we helped. We sat with them on a one-to-one. So that was a mentoring program we did. We sat with the kid. He wasn't able to draw. So he stood like, you know, I still remember. He started blank, no expression. And blank and no expression is something which is accepted there. You know, they have gone through hell. Some are from streets, some are from left in stations. They accept that. So from that blank expression, breaking that barrier, breaking that ice, and sitting and having conversation, simple conversation, you start drawing. And then he looks at you, he observes you, takes the paper and pencil and starts scribbling. And I still remember that one kid drew a king. Now, I want to be a king is an expression. Whichever way it has impacted him, but it did. And we allowed that dream, saying that you can be a king. The other kid, I still remember, do a Ganesha. To him, he looks at Ganesha as being, you know, he's seen. What he's seen is that Ganesha is getting what he wants, the food. And I asked him, why Ganesha? He gets food. Usko to khana milta hai. No one, you know, he doesn't. He just sits there. No one. So these were expressions that were happening. And we were doing these mentoring one-to-one programs with these kind of art camps. Art camp was a day-long camp. And it took a lot of energy from the volunteers. So if you had 60 kids at one go, we were taking 250 kids, which means that many volunteers, which meant that much space, which meant that much of funds happening. So all that, so we started small, 30, 60, 250 at one place. What we were doing, that we were going to places beyond Bangalore in Karnataka. And I still remember there was a place in near Chikmangalura village where we got the entire place to ourselves. And there they called 3 or 4 government schools together and they allowed us, they allowed us to have. Now, those are the things that we started doing. So the art camp was the genesis of A Little Dream. We started with art camps. So that was one program that we had. The second program that we were doing was based on hospitals. Now, another thing that in hospitals, there were NGOs that were working on, like cancer hospitals, they were giving them nutrition, food. But again, there was a softer layer when a thalassemia kid, okay, comes from Tamil Nadu, comes from other states, he is he's there and he has blood transfusion happening day in and day out for those many days. His parents are exhausted. There's nothing that we went and started having programs there. We started having storytelling sessions, walking inside the hospital beds. We started having clowns walking in, having conversations. We started having toy programs, handing over toys. We did the most unconventional stuff. I still tell you a story at Indira Gandhi Hospital. There was this kid, and I don't know, Rashmi, I'm going to get a little sentimental on it. His name was Kartik, okay? A kid from one of the villages nearby. His mom and dad sitting there. And I'm doing this program all around, giving kids. He looks at me and he smiles. And he's smiling away, smiling. So I go and have a conversation with him. So I ask him that, what do you want? Just out of the blue. And he tells me JCB. I don't know, JCB? He wanted that toy called the JCB because outside the window, he could see a guy, that machine tilling. Now, I said, yes, done. I spoke to the parents and found out when is his next session of coming and doing the trial. They come for a period of time. They do the blood transfusion and they go. I give him the JCB. I bring it. And you know, it's like I said, I'll make it happen. And I did make it happen. I gave him a JCB. And that's where his parents told me, the doctors have said, we don't know how long he'll live. It could be days or it could be a few months. That's when. Then to say that his birthday is in the next 3 days. I was like, we got special permission. And on that floor, we celebrated his birthday. And you won't believe me. When we went there back, he was with those tubes. I still have that photo, and he was with us trying to smile and cut a cake. My hubby went wrong, and it made it up with whatever constrictions we had. We, you know, put balloons and all that. We took photographs of it, and in the next 20 days, he passed away. Now, what we had is his memories. I made A4 size, photographs of him with his parents, with his little sister, and handed it over to the parents. Now, what did we do? We created those memories for that kid. What did we do? We gave him a beautiful birthday, a birthday cake cut, which he hadn't done before. So these were stories, little stories that we were building, even in those cancer hospitals. When you see a kid has to go through the trials and tribulations, it's horrific to see. An adult is there, and then you see that, and you try to, you sit with the kid and you play a musical item with him. He wants to sing but cannot sing, so you sing it for him. These are little things we try to do. So I remember volunteers becoming characters out of Disneyland, wearing those and going and, you know, mingling with those kids. So that was, hospital has been another beautiful program. Wherever we've got permission, we've worked with the doctors, and we aspire to do much more in hospitals. That's one place. Wherever we get the permission, we go. Diabetes is another kid. HIV is another place that we've worked. So these are hospitals. That's another big program that we run in these hospitals. Of course, permission is a big thing. So we are trying to break barriers in various hospitals. The other thing that we do is dental. Dental is a program. Dental is an expensive thing. Okay. So going to a GP, a general physician, is an easier thing, Bukharua. But this is, until it is really bad, these kids do not go, especially in slums and in orphanages also. So we had a group of dentists who joined me, a collaborative program with dentists, where we walked into a slum or an orphanage. And I still remember we handing over the dental kits. Then we make them open it. And then we talk, we ask them to name the brush as a friend. So we asked him, iska naam kya? He says, Polly, Molu, whatever. Now Molu is going over a white track, and we make them count their teeth. And then we tell them how to brush their teeth. what is dental hygiene? Brushing teeth in the night is not heard of. The toothpaste are expensive. So, you know, they don't get it. So we help them. We take dental hygiene in a fun way, explain to them what is dental hygiene, why it should be done, a storytelling method of putting dental hygiene and putting rhymes. We've used rhymes to explain dental hygiene. That was the fun part of it. So we've done a lot of dental checkups. And so dentists have been a core of a group of dentists have come together and done dental programs with us. That's another program we did. The other program, and that is my like my real core program, is the mentoring program we did with artists. So we worked with 5 orphanages and we identified kids who can sing and dance. Then I got a group of professionals who, for the last 2 months, every weekend, we've had workshops conduct. So a group of kids who have the potential and have the interest to dance or sing, and then got them interested in, if they're interested. So a Bharatnatyam dancer worked with a group of kids in an orphanage for 2.5 months. And then we put up a show for our 10th anniversary. And I tell you, through these 10 years, this was the culmination of what we could have done best. So the kid, he works for 2.5 months on the program. And then on 16th July, front of a live audience, he performs. So it's not just the performance, it's the process. She wears that dress or he wears that dress, the jewelry, the makeup. He or she feels like a celebrity. You know, they start heroine. So he or she is a hero or a heroine for that day. That immense happiness that kid got, he or she, and you have to see those videos, you know, they came and they performed on stage front of a live audience. It was so aspirational, the exposure. So the kid came and told the Bharatnatyam dancer, this is what I want to become. And that starts to see how from mentoring, we can take them to a scholarship program. So unless he or she got the exposure, would have never known what one could have done. Because you have to understand, they get into life skill in from the orphanage after you're 17 and 18. They have skills are given to them so that they can support themselves, right? Be it embroidery, knitting, making basket, whatever that the person can imbibe to earn that kind of money to survive. And then you bring these softer skills that I can become a dancer. I can become a singer. That is the most beautiful part of the journey to understand that. Because these are kids who have a lot of potential, but do not have the exposure, or the privilege to even come across and talk about it to somebody who would listen to them. So that, I think that journey is a beautiful journey. There are lots of other programs that we do. The toy drive program in the slums. We go and we do that. We do food drive programs, a lot of them that we've put across through these various years. We work on simple things like, I remember we took a baker once and we did a baking program with the teenage, these were 13, 14 years, and we showed them the whole process of baking cakes. It's an illusion, right? Things like baking and all that. So we expose them to that. And I think that's the beautiful part. What they are not exposed, you give them that exposure.
Essentially, when you called it a little dream, what was the mission, vision and goal of a little dream? When you put it together and called it a little dream, what were you stepping out to do? And what was the impact you were planning to create?
So when I started A Little Dream, I said, I started with the creative part of it. And I said that, you know, what I want to do is basically make a difference, quote unquote, in the life of these kids. That's why my tagline says, it says enrichen lives. Lives are lives, but you take them a step forward and that you say is enriching lives. That has always been the goal. whichever way, there are multiple projects that we've done, multiple things that we've done, but the basic, so I tied with Goonj, and we did a project for, again, making a difference for 1,000 kids' shoes. So collaborations has been a major thing, tied up with another IT company, and we gave solar lamps to makeshift shelters where the kids were. So these rag pickers come from different states, okay, and so they have no electricity, and the kids were studying under these candles, Hebbal slums. There were massive makeshift shelters, 300, 400 makeshift shelters, those where we gave solar lamps. We help them with the solar lamps. So wherever and whenever the need has come, we've made sure that we get across. And another thing, Rashmi, I believe there's a whole lot of people who want to make a difference, but they don't know how to go about it. Which is the channel? How do we do it? Where is, you know, how do I go? That's where we as a catalyst or a change maker come in place and say, hey, you want to make, you are a baker, you are a storyteller, you are a dentist, whoever you are, whatever your profession, we help you through, you know, bring it to those who need a change. So here I am like a catalyst for those who want to make a change and those who need that change. And we help to make that happen. And I think that's how I look at it. So I wanted to tell you one more thing about people making a difference. During the pandemic, there came a stage where during the second phase that these doctors and nurses were working day in and day out in the COVID hospitals, right? And the canteens were not operational. Again, a feeling of restlessness, want to see what can be done. And that is where we came up with, we tied up with something called the doctor's kitchen. And they were giving homemade food for these hospitals, the doctors, nurses, and staff. I went to my building apartment. I spoke to about 40, the homemakers. Homemakers, they are working from home. So they said, Reena, don't worry. If I'm making four meals, I'll up it to 10 meals. But this much we can do for people, for doctors and nurses who are giving up their life, risking their lives. And I replicated this model. So in a day, on a Wednesday, we were giving 200 meals to a particular three, four hospitals, right? Which included the staff, the doctors, the nurses. And so imagine doing that over a week with five buildings. I went and I spoke to these buildings. I replicated the same model that please provide me 200 meals from your building on a particular day. That's it. So Wednesday was ours. Thursday was someone else's. Friday was it. We were giving 800 meals a day during the COVID crisis. And I tell you, and these homemakers, they were given certificates and all that. I mean, nothing made a difference. I said, Reena, we got together and you said like something we can do. They were elated. Now hear this part. This was the way. The kids saw their mother cooking and they were seeing these plastic dabbas being made. They started making notes of love of heart, stay well, best of luck, and putting on those dabbas. Imagine a doctor after the whole day opening that dabba and seeing that little note from a kid. So the kid got involved also. So my basic thing is, I believe that everyone wants to make a change, given the opportunity, and if they will always want to make a change.
Yeah, very true. And when you're doing such meaningful work, there's one question, because this podcast was born in the pandemic. The idea was to share stories of people who are going beyond themselves to make a difference. And that's how this podcast was born. So it was born at a reflection moment for me. So personally for you, Reena, with so much happening, I don't even know whether you had moments to reflect. But now looking back, what have been your biggest reflections from the pandemic?
Pandemic was a very difficult time. I lost my loved ones. I lost a lot of my aunts, a lot of my uncles. But in that loss, I realized I still have the comfort of my home. I'm still at home. There was a worse war outside. The magnitude was humongous. And there was this restlessness wanting to do something. Rashmi, I cannot explain the kind of work that I have done in pandemic. I have never done in those 2 years the kind of work that I have done. It was amazing amount of work. Like I said, one was the meals project. The other one we did was the crematorium workers project. We realized the crematorium workers, okay, the dome, the purohit, the furnace guy, all those are working day in and day out, slogging themselves, not going home, because the magnitude was so much. I mean, imagine the numbers, it was really bad. So what they were doing, that A Little Dream at that moment got together, and I asked them that, you know, how can we make a change in that kind of scenario? So what we did was, we started calling it the relief kits for crematorium workers. And what was in a relief kit? It was masks, gloves. Sometimes they didn't get time to wear masks, or it wasn't around. Masks, gloves, sanitizers, and then we filled it with goodies. Any dry goodie that would survive for 4 or 5 days. Biscuits, food, juices. We made separate kits. And in 13 crematoriums all over Bangalore, we distributed these kits for all the crematorium workers. And when we saw the success of it in Bangalore, we shifted it to Calcutta. And in Calcutta, I still remember having talked to the main guy at the crematorium, took down the names, and made personalized bags for every crematorium worker. And reached out to them and hand over the kits. And if they wanted again, we were doing it again for them. That was a, and they were elated to get a bag with his name written on it. With that, it's like a sense of, you know, when you work like this, that was another beautiful project that A Little Dream did. And not to forget our orphanages. I couldn't go there. I couldn't spend time there. So what we did, we had online sessions of puppetry and storytelling online for these kids. They were getting bored, right? So we did this with, through a lot of storytellers who came across, and they said, we will do this with you. And we were giving them these sessions. Where the internet was bad, we taped and sent it through WhatsApp, so that the kids, when they got, like, there was time, they were not going out, they were cooped up, we did that. Another thing happened, donations started really going down. We made ration kits, and we went to these orphanages, and through friends. So I used a lot of network. Friends, family, anyone who's staying that side of town, please, all you need to do, talk to your grocer nearby. He'll make that kit, and please go and give it across. So where I was able to do, I was doing Whitefield, Sarjapur area. Someone else was doing it in Malaysia. So we gave ration kits to these kids. We had massive drives, massive food drives for migrant workers. We ensured, I remember, we had cooked meals, and we did mobile cooked van meals in this Fraser Town area and Hebbalia. 1,000 meals were given. So that is the magnitude of work we did for the migrant workers, the crematorium workers, the nurses, the doctors, the hospital staff, the orphanages, every place where we felt there's a need, there's a lacune, we need to fill in, we were there. And we were working with organizations and places where they could reach. So basically mobilizing the funds, getting it done, and then reaching out to us. Yeah. So yeah. I think in pandemic, me, my volunteers, we made a big, big difference where it was required. I didn't leave my family also. They sat, I still remember, 13 days to make those kits. So everything came home, and we were making this because it was not easy to get volunteers. We couldn't meet, so we were doing all that. So wherever possible, we used that. And that was the beauty of it, that whatever the loss inward, you, there is a giving back to the society. And I think there where we made a difference.
Oh my God, Reena, there's so much you've done. There's so much. But in this journey, I'm sure there are many precious moments. But what is that one moment, whether it is of recognition, whether it is of joy, whatever, which warms you and makes you so happy you're on this journey that you have chosen?
I think a very simplistic smile on that child's face. You know, the twinkle in his eyes, the smile on his face. I think that is the greatest reward that I get, or I believe that what really helps me. And if you ask me, if I've touched a life, is Karthik's life. Those little anecdotes, those stories, there are many, but Karthik still remains the most precious one.
So we are almost at the end of the conversation, and three life lessons. I'm sure you've seen a lot more, but three life lessons that you'd like to leave us.
The first life lesson, and through these are life lessons that I've picked up through all those phases of my childhood, my working phase, my giving back to society. I think passion. If you're passionate about something, and there's an innate belief, there's this honesty in it that you want to make it work, I believe the universe conspires to make it happen. And that's my, honest belief, that otherwise this magnitude of work, or this touching of human lives, would not have been possible. Without that passion, and with the honesty of passion, the universe that conspires to make it happen. But it has to be, and of course, 100% of hard work will make it always happen. So there's nothing that you cannot do if you have the passion and the willpower to make it happen. The universe will come together. That's one life lesson I've learned. Second life lesson I have learned through the years is let me put it this way, that if you if you believe that you can make a team, enroll a team to work with you, and your enrollment is very important. What is enrollment? And that I have learned through the years, that when I talk to some person and I enroll the person in what am I trying to do? Why am I trying to do? How is it going to help the other person? If that honesty comes across, people get enrolled and work with you. That's how you motivate people. So enrollment is an important process of it. Ye kar do is not the way. Or, you know, you just have to say with honesty that you want, them to work with you. And they will come across and make it happen. So I think that's the second life lesson. The third life lesson is it's okay to be an outlier. I've dribbled with this throughout my, I wasn't fitting in. I didn't fit in into the school life or the conventional work life. I wasn't fitting in. And that was a question that kept on revolving in my mind, that why was I so different? Why it is okay to be an outlier. It is the outlier in you that, that helps you to walk the path that no one has walked. And therefore, it pushes you to be, to walk that path. And I think that's the beauty of it. So those would be my three life lessons. Passion, the world conspires. Enrollment in other people, getting them together for teamwork. And the third, it's okay to be different.
As long as you're making a difference, outlier or otherwise, I think the smiles and the good karma that you collect are enough to keep you happy and joyous. And the beauty is you're collaborating with so many others who are also enjoying the process and taking the benefit of seeing the joys in all.
I think I missed out on that word, enjoying the process.
Yeah.
I think with the teamwork and everything. Everyone is enjoying the process.
Yeah. And you clearly are, because I remember meeting you 10 years ago when you had just started out, and the joy and the twinkle in your eyes still continue after 10 years.
Thank you, Rashmi.
Reena, may your tribe increase and God bless you. May you get all and more that you need to make this difference to another 10,000 other kids who are waiting out there to be that particular person whose little dream needs to be fulfilled. God bless you, Reena, and all the very best. Thank you so much. Honored to have had you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Thank you, Rashmi. It was an honor. It was so amazing. I didn't feel it. It was like having a conversation with a nice friend. So thank you. And it is again karma of fate that I met you again and how.
Yeah.
And I think that is important. So big, big thank you. Thank you for all the encouragement. And I hope and pray that we are able to touch many more thousand lives.
Yes. Amen to that. And God bless you, Reena. Thank you so much.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.